Victory or death!
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 Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Reardon, the voice of freedom behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, bringing you, the Patriots, the information you need to stay in the fight to preserve your liberty. This is episode 22-26, the 26th episode of 2022. I'm going to talk about a couple different things in this episode. I'll share with you some stuff from Soviet life, which if you haven't heard some of those, they're quite illuminating. I will talk about that. I will talk about and share from you chapter 3 from The Lesser Magistrate, The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrate. I'm going to talk about the diesel shortage. I'm going to debunk some school myths for you Christian parents out there that are taking your kids to the government school. And there's a lot of reasons people tell themselves that. And I've got a great article that I'm going to share that debunks those myths. And also going to talk about just a few other random things. Where have I been? Well, I got a cold, and it wasn't a bad one. But my voice went really deep and almost lost my voice for, I don't know, a week and a half. And I just wasn't able to do it. So here I am. And I'm back. I didn't die. There's that meme. A lot of military guys have it on a shirt that says, "Yeah, but did you die?" And essentially it's this people telling themselves excuses as to why something was horrible, and then they say, "Yeah, but did you die?" Well, there's a lot been going on in this world, a lot been going on in Virginia now. I want to talk about the election real quick. It's coming up, November 8th. It's a Tuesday. It takes less than 20 minutes to pop in your voting place on the way to work. It is close by your house, and you know it. To pop in and vote. Do I think that elections, that the democratic process in this republic that they've converted into a democracy, and they do say, we got to save our democracy. Heard Glenn Youngkin said that. That's why everyone talks about Glenn Youngkin, how great he is. Okay, what did he do? What has he done? He beat Ralph Northam. And I don't, you know, I know he beat Terry McAuliffe, but he beat Ralph Northam. That's who he was running against. And just like the Democrats coming up here, the Republicans have a real opportunity to beat them. But we don't live in a democracy. At least we're not supposed to. We're supposed to live in a democratic republic. And we're supposed to live in one where the Senate is actually appointed by the state. But with the 17th Amendment, they really blew that thing up. So do I think, back to my original question, that we have an opportunity through the democratic process to fix America? No. We lack leadership everywhere, and that includes the Republican Party. We lack leadership in our own communities with just normal people, your neighbors. No one is leading anywhere. Just look at Washington and the bumbling bunch of stooge idiots that they have in charge of everything. There's not a competent person in charge of anything up in Washington, not one. And with that bumbling oaf, dementia patient getting worse by the day that is in the White House, I mean, my goodness, we, with the nuclear arsenal that the United States has and that bumbling fool is put in charge of and whoever's pulling his strings could do with, we literally could destroy the world multiple times over. Just us. And that's not even retaliatory. That's just us. And that fool is in charge of it. That doddering idiot, bumbling dementia patient is technically in charge of that. Now, is he? No. But someone is. And that person is also a moron. So the only people actually doing any leadership, and they're doing a poor job of that at that, is the globalist elite. But they've got all these morons that they put in place that can't get the job done. So we got that going for us. Why should you vote? Well, We're not apparently ready for violence, which I think is the necessary next step. Am I advocating for it? Not really. We don't have people on our side, the fighters, the trigger pullers. There's no leadership there. And we don't have any group cohesive that's put together that we could actually do something with once we did that. So it would just be chaos. Am I ready for it? Sure. Is it going to happen anytime soon? I don't think so. And so what does that leave us with? That leaves us with voting. That leaves us with the soapbox and the ballot box. Now, could they cheat? I would expect them to. I would expect absolute cheating. If you see some of these races that are close swinging hard towards the Democrats, it was cheating. I mean, there's just, who the heck is voting excitedly about Democrats? Democrats are in the polls, are losing the black vote, are losing the Hispanic vote because they're screwing everything up. And so it's important that we vote. And it's real simple. Is the guy a Republican? Vote for him. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even matter. Your difference is center or right or far left communist. Those are your choices. And the far left communist wants to kill you, force you to be vaccinated, shut you up, take your guns, and do all manner of not good things. So your choice. You can say, well, I'm not voting for that guy. I don't believe in blah, blah, blah. I've been there. I get it. I didn't vote for John McCain. I just couldn't do it. But we're at a point now where we're biding time. We need to hold off these doddering old fools until Ron DeSantis or Trump and others like them can get into positions of leadership. Will that fix the problem ultimately? Here's why I don't think so. Our nation is more interested in pursuing wickedness, in pursuing everything but God, and our nation has no leaders. You combine those two things, that puts us in a very bad spot. Now, could that change? Yes. And we need to provide the tools that if that change happens, we can see very rapid improvements. We essentially have a dictatorship in America, but it's in the form of an oligarchy. There is an elite globalist, whatever, group of people, BlackRock, doesn't really matter, controlling things, pulling the levers of power. It isn't the politicians that we supposedly elected to represent us and what a lot of people would say are leaders. Now, I don't have a leader up in Washington. I just did my taxes and owe all this money. I'll talk about that in another episode because it was so bad that I just, after filing them, just set it on the desk and walked away because I couldn't, what the heck? I mean, there's that $3,000 that they sent me in a check that I ranted about on the show. I'm pretty sure about the child tax credit check. I said, we're not getting anything here. We're getting literally nothing. If you end up owing taxes every year, you're getting nothing. They give you a check and you have to give it back. And that's exactly what happened. So instead of owing, you know, $4,000, I owe $7,000. Oh, and I put that in air quotes, oh, I owe this money so that they can piss it away in the form of inflation and spending and sending it to Ukraine and sending it everywhere else in the world, but sure as heck aren't sending it to actually do what needs to be done, which is stop spending money. They need to stop spending money. That is the only thing that stops inflation. Stop spending money. And here they are. They just continue to go. And, you know, we're seeing this very strange thing happening in the economy. The economy is entering a recession. Inflation is impacting things. But when you look around, you don't see it. It's really weird. There's people not working. How the heck are they paying their bills? The government's only paying so much. I haven't figured that part out. You know, people aren't working. You know, Mike Rowe talks about this all the time. They've just checked out. It's weird. But beyond that, you look at housing prices and land prices and everything else, and it's not free falling. It's just kind of there. Hasn't changed much. Land, surprisingly, if you look around, is much more valuable than I think it, one that I think it should be. But also smaller acreages have these just huge price tags. And it's just bizarre. You know, the per acre price in the surrounding area here is really high. What's fueling that? Well, some of it's inventory. There's some other things, but I don't know. How are people with today's interest rates still doing what they're doing? If you know, send me a message. I'd love to hear your theories on that because I haven't figured it out yet. Maybe I will soon, but every morning I get up, I look at the MLS, I see what's out there. I got my real estate license, so been working on that. But yeah, it's a very bizarre thing. But the government comes along and they say, hey, we got the solution to the problem. This is a clip from Thomas Sowell. Listen to what he says about the government fixing things.
One of the things that pains me in the current crisis is people saying that Congress really needs to do something to make the economy recover. No, they need to let the economy recover. That the economy did not get to be the biggest in the world by politicians doing things. All the millions of other people that whose names we don't even know, those are the people who made it the biggest economy in the world. And if politicians will get out of their way, we can and let the economy recover, it can do that.
Yeah, what they need to do is get out of the way. Get out of my way. Let me do what I want to do. Let me make the money I want to make. And stop fleecing me everywhere I turn. Stop wrecking the purchasing power of my dollar by printing money. I can't write that off. It is a form of theft. Inflation is a form of theft on all of us. They're stealing your purchasing power. My wife and I make pretty decent money, but I wouldn't know it, and we wouldn't know it looking at our bank account. So we're going to sit down on Wednesday, and we're doing a deep dive into figure out what the heck. I want to know, how much did I spend last year in comparison to this year? We're not doing anything different. It sure feels like we're not making any money, and we're making more this year than we made last year, which means something's off. I'll tie that into my next episode or a future episode when I talk about my taxes, because that's going to be part of the conversation. But let's talk about diesel shortages. We've got diesel shortages. This is from Forbes, and the author is Robert Rapier. I will post a link in the show notes at radiofreevirginia.com. By the way, you can also get things like merch. I've got t-shirts and a few other things there that you can get with stuff on them. And if you have an idea for a custom shirt, you say, I want this shirt. Okay, well, let me know, and I'll take care of you. The other thing is the show sponsors. You can find their links and information on the website as well. So the article starts, last week, the Energy Information Administration, EIA, another government institution. How do we have so many stupid government institutions? You know, as Republicans have fought fault for this too. You know, let's have another government agency and they'll fix stuff. Reported that distillate inventories were at their lowest level since 2008. The primary distillates are diesel, jet fuel, and heating oil. However, in 2008, distillate levels were low coming out of spring. Currently, they are low going into fall. That's far worse than the situation in 2008. Distillate demand generally spikes in spring when farmers are planting crops and in fall when they are harvesting those crops and people start buying fuel oil for winter. Thus, a low distillate inventory in late April 2008 isn't quite as serious as low inventories in October 2022. In fact, distillate inventories haven't been this low in October since EIA began reporting this data in 1982. These low distillate inventories are why diesel prices are above $5 a gallon nationwide. You know, think about that. When you have a truck that can hold hundreds of gallons in each tank, what it costs to fill that up. There's plenty of video out there of guys showing what they've paid that are truckers. Why is there a diesel shortage this year? There are four factors, but two of those factors are in play every year. As mentioned above, distillate demand spikes at this time of year, but it does that every year. This is also the time of year that refineries are doing maintenance. They tend to do that in the spring and fall, which is when demand is lower and weather is decent, so refinery capacity drops at this time of year. Third, U.S. refinery capacity has fallen in the past years as several unprofitable refineries were closed. I would say that's true, but I will bet that if you were to do a deep dive in why those refineries closed, it was unionization, it was regulation, it was EPA, it was all of these factors, and they said, okay, we're out of business. So that's a new factor that has appeared in the past couple of years. But the primary reason is the cutoff of Russian imports. Prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the U.S. was importing nearly 700,000 barrels per day of petroleum and petroleum products. Most of those imports were finished products and refinery inputs that boosted distillate supplies in the U.S. So they have all of these precursors and add-ons that they use to make diesel. So what it's saying is we're not getting those anymore. So it's not just oil that was coming in. It was barrels of finished product. It was barrels of this. It was barrels of that. So not actual barrels, but that's how they measure it. So you got to think about that in relation to this. But they're going to blame it on the government and this, what's the name of this organization? The EIA is going to, of course, say it's Russia's fault. Well, you know, yeah, yes and no. We were energy independent. We had the production capacity to make our own when Trump was president. And the bumbling dementia patient, Bumbles, and his crony friends, and the giggler, and all the others that are up there said, no, we're going to shut all this stuff down. And we're not going to let you explore for what we've got, which takes years to find and put into the pipeline. Figuratively and literally. So here we go. I was going to blame it on Russia and Ukraine. The loss of those Russian imports have caused problems for refineries as they struggle to fill holes in their production or their product slates. Refineries do have a small amount of flexibility in shifting gasoline production to diesel production, but it's a relatively small amount, and it's like 5% according to this. That also means that if refiners do shift production, that also potentially creates shortage in the gasoline market. Some relief is on the way as some diesel imports are on the way from Europe. Oh, this is hilarious. Europe is primarily a diesel consuming society. Most of their vehicles, not most, but every time I've ever been, I've been to England and France, and everything's diesel there. The taxis are diesel, the trucks are diesel, everything I saw was diesel. Now, I'm sure there's some gas engines, no doubt, but so they're sending us, Europe, who's been starved of Russian oil and energy products, is sending us oil. This is the biggest pile of garbage that I've ever heard. But the distillate market won't likely return to normal before next summer at the earliest. So all you using heating oil, jet fuel, did you know that some refineries use jet fuel? They have these jet turbines. They also, some of them run on natural gas. But they use jet turbines to create steam, to heat up the steam. It's pretty cool. I don't know how many of those are in Virginia. I do know that that a lot of the time the energy shifts from one place to the next. I do know that energy costs are going up. They have been talking about getting approval to raise the prices because of the cost of fossil fuels, which are in a lot of those, and also the regulatory garbage that the government puts on these things. So get ready. Why am I even bringing this up? Well, you need to be equipped and ready for this. If it doesn't happen, cool. But if it does, and stuff's not showing up at the store, you start seeing the shelves empty because they can only run so many trucks because they only have so much diesel, this could be a problem. So just be ready for that. But you know, what you hear is it's Russia's fault. It's all Russia's fault. Not really. You know, we get some of these products from China, I'll guarantee, these precursor, you know, chemicals and different things. And I've heard stories and reports on Forward Observer. There was a recent article or recent guest on there talking about the supply chain stuff from China. And he's saying that a lot of these things, they're at the ports. They're ready to ship out, and China is not shipping them. No explanation. They're just not letting them get on the boats. I don't know. And there's a lot of weird stuff going on in China. China is just had their communist election, which is more like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's not election. But Xi basically did another one of the, you know, the way they do things. It's like this guy disappeared and got rid of that guy. And this guy with power over here, he's gone. And haul that guy off to someplace. He comes back all scared looking a few days later and is supportive of Xi. I mean, it's a different culture over there, let me tell you. And it always has been. But as communists, oh my gosh, it's nuts. You do what they say or you die. And they'll scare you and hurt you along the way. As I've talked about, you know, many times. When it comes to communism, let's talk about school myths and debunk some of those. So there's a lot of people out there and they say these things. They say things like, what's this article say? My child can be a light in public school. Isn't that what Jesus called us to be? Or my child will be a missionary in the public school system. Or we can't afford to pay for biblical education for our child. Or we can counteract the non-Christian influences in the public school. I love that one. That one's great, you know, and they come home with blue hair. What do you think that means? Oh, I don't know. They're just expressing their individuality. My child will not perform as well in Christian schools as in public schools. My children will trust what I teach them instead of what the government school teaches them. I'm going to replace the word public school with government school every time I see it. My children will be in a bubble in a Christian school. They won't be ready for the real world. Huh. My child is a gifted athlete and needs to attend public school to get noticed. Okay, there's some truth to that, and I don't care what he says. I will read all of this to you, but there is some truth to that. And you know, theater and extracurricular activities that the government schools are able to provide with their massive budgets, yeah, it's different. And if your child is a star athlete quality, you know, they might not get noticed. But it, really? That's the reason. If you get rid of all these others, that's the reason. We're going to talk about that in a sec here. But this article is titled Debunking 8 Popular Myths About Public and Christian Education. It's by a guy named Bill Blankshane, S-C-H-A-E-N. I don't remember the article this is from. My wife actually pulled this out. It was in some psychology magazine or Christian psychology. I'm not really sure. My child can be a light in government school. Isn't that what Jesus called us to be? Jesus may have called you to be a light, but nowhere does he call your child to the task of cultural transformation. His instruction about letting the light shine was to his adult disciples whom he had specifically chosen and empowered for the task before them. See Matthew 5, 14 through 16. As long as we are quoting Jesus, he also said that anyone who harms a child should have a millstone hung around his neck and be tossed into the sea. See Matthew 18:6. He clearly understood that children should be protected from any and all who may harm them physically and spiritually. Yet many parents send their children, untrained children, into a worldview battlefield every day, unprepared and unable to withstand the daily assault on their faith. Scripture teaches us there is a time for training when we are children and a time to be what we have been trained to be when we are mature. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 22:6. Myth number 2, my child will be a missionary in the government school system. If the light of a candle represents your child's faith, consider this simple truth. Every light needs oxygen to thrive or even to survive. The government school system currently prohibits the oxygen of God's truth. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. Romans 10:17. On top of the oxygen-deprived environment, the state-mandated curriculum and procedures actively attack your child's faith, creating a violent storm that threatens to extinguish the flame entirely. It's like placing a lone candle in a sealed jar in the middle of a hurricane. If it survives at all, the candle will likely burn out quickly. At best, it will burn weakly, a shadow of the flame it could have been. Why hope they survive when they can thrive in an oxygen-rich environment? Myth number 3. We can't afford to pay for biblical education for our child. Unfortunately, our current school funding system does require that property taxes support the government schools, whether you send your child to those schools or not. And we've talked about this argument that, you know, or I have, that you hear it all the time. They say, well, we have to have an educated society. And my argument is, then can I have that? Can I have an educated society? You're stealing all my money and giving me nothing. I'll continue. It says, thus, many parents who chose Christian education must pay twice. The reality, however, is that it is not a question of if you will pay for your child's education, but when you will pay for it. A parent who invests time, energy, and resources in the biblical foundation will reap the promises of God as the child continues as an adult in the way he should go. On the other hand, a parent who does not invest in a biblical foundation will also often pay in life's consequences, heartache, and trials as their child nears adulthood and beyond. Lest we forget these scriptures, may God supply, my God shall supply all your needs according to the riches in Christ Jesus, Philippians 4:19. He who loves his child is diligent to discipline him, Proverbs 13:24. Do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever one sows, that he will also reap, Galatians 6:7. Open your mouth wide, and I will fill it, Psalm 81:10. Myth 4, we can counteract the non-Christian influence in a government school. Much of what your kids learn is not only taught but caught. Your child will absorb just as much from the people around them as they do from the actual textbooks and curriculum. For 7 to 8 hours per day, they will absorb it, both from teachers, whom you tell them to listen to, that's true, and peers. Bad company corrupts good morals, 1 Corinthians 15:33. Every time, and it does every time, in the government school system, your child will be daily influenced by people who either do not want or are not permitted to live as if God were even relevant at all. In a Christian education setting, your child will be surrounded by teachers, students, and other families who, while not perfect, share your faith in Christ. More than ever, we need to build authentic faith communities. I will say that there are schools that, because there are no secular private school alternatives or academies or whatever, that non-Christians will send their kids to because they want their kids to get a private education, and they're okay that there's Christians involved. So you'll have kids at some of these schools. My wife's a counselor. Okay, I hear stories that don't live a Christian life. But you guaranteed will have that from kids in a government school. Guaranteed. And the parties and the things that they talk about and that they're on their social media platforms, and which changes, seems weekly now with what's out there. So just as a side there, you are going to have kids in these schools who don't know Jesus. It's that simple. I'm telling you this from my son's a senior. My oldest is a senior, and he's been in and out of government. He's been in and out of this private school, as we've homeschooled him other times, his whole life. And so, yeah, there's kids in there that they don't know the Lord, for sure. Myth number 5, my child will not perform as well in a Christian school as in a government school. Two significant factors to a student's academic success are parental involvement and caring teachers. Most Christian education environments only partner with supportive and involved parents. Caring teachers are often second to none as they daily seek to disciple students in partnership with parents. These two factors alone are quantifiably proven to raise academic results. As long as a Christian education environment insists on quality from its teachers and you are actively involved in your child's education, your child will be well positioned to succeed. That's true. I mean, that's true from in any regard, though, frankly. You can rarely in the government schools find teachers who are Christians. You can rarely find teachers who care, but they're not allowed to teach what they want. They're not allowed to use the curriculum they want. They're given what they're given, and they're told to teach what they teach, and they, for the most part, do. You have some that will add disclaimers to things, but overall, that's what you're going to get. Myth number 6, my child will trust what I teach them instead of what the government school teaches them. The most important lesson you will teach your children by sending them to a school where God is irrelevant is that God is indeed irrelevant. Although most Christian parents would never dream of sending a child to a school that would force them to publicly confess that God is dead, the government school system accomplishes this same objective. By teaching students, they can learn all they need for life apart from any thought of God. He might as well be dead, and they learn all of this with your approval. Let that sink in. Remember, nothing is neutral. He who is not with me is against me, Luke 11:23. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight, Proverbs 9:10. Myth number 7, my children will be in a bubble in a Christian school. They won't be ready for the real world. First, government school is not the real world. It is a forced learning environment from which God is excluded. That description does not fit a biblical definition of how the world is. Second, students are like young plants in a greenhouse. A young plant must be protected, fed, and carefully cultivated. As it grows more mature, it can be exposed for seasons of time and the outside elements, although still under careful observation. Only when it has reached maturity is it able to enter the outside world and thrive. Likewise, students in a Christian education environment are protected quite a bit when they are younger. However, as they mature, they should be eased into understanding the different points of view that they will encounter and the temptations they will need to resist. By the time they reach their later high school years, students should be exposed to just about every false teaching they will ever encounter on the college campus and beyond. We are called to be in the world, but not of it. When we stand on the truth, we have no fear of falsehoods. For example, in the school I led, we taught a literal six-day interpretation of creation based on the Genesis account. However, as our students matured, they learned of different viewpoints within Christianity as well as the macro-evolutionary ideas that clearly contradict both scripture and sound science. There was something he said up here. By the time they reach their later high school years, students should be exposed to just about every false teaching they will ever encounter on the college campus and beyond. Now, just like with government school, homeschool, private school, if you're not investing in your kids, if you're not having conversations with them about what you see in the world, if you're not spending time with them and investing in their lives, something else will be invested in them, whether that's their friends, TV, society, extracurricular activities, and the people they encounter there. Those viewpoints will be invested in them. So either you can or somewhere else, they're going to get that information. I'm always having conversations with my kids. When I'm driving them, I'm talking about stuff, I'm ranting about things, whatever. I'm injecting my viewpoints of the world into them. I'm investing that. So either the school is going to do it but more importantly, I would say it's more important that you do it. That's your job. You're not there to be their friend. That's your job to do that. All right, finally, myth number 8. My child is a gifted athlete and needs to attend government school to get noticed. Athletic talent scouts find talent wherever it may be. The list is long of professional athletes who attended Christian schools. Our school had graduated a professional basketball player by the time I left. However, we as parents must always remember to keep first things first. Nowhere in Scripture will you find a call to play sports professionally. We do find a call to do all that we may do with all our might. Thus, a full athletic program with many options for students can be a good thing, but should not be the main thing. We give it 100% to please Christ. We play to win. However, sports are not, nor should they be, the most important thing at any school. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his own soul? Mark 8:36. We must refuse to follow our culture around, as that seems to worship sports. We must intentionally choose to prioritize our focus based on the worship of God. We play for Him, the one who laid down his life for us. Consider these thoughts as you weigh the value of Christian education for your child. It is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make. For years, I've done side hustle stuff. Currently, I work at wage slave job. I like my company. So no statement about that. It's just that when you are earning a paycheck and that's all you're doing, you can't take advantages of the many schemes that the government has created to shelter your money. They created this for their friends. They created this for themselves. And we can take advantage of this if we have a business entity of some sort and we can write off a truck and a home office and our cell phone and all of these things. You can't do any of that with a paycheck. You just can't. So for many years, I did side hustle stuff. And for many years was homeschooling my boys. And it got easier and easier as they got older because I pretty much did it like this. One, they're boys. So they just wanted to do their work and be done so they could go do whatever they wanted to do, play, ride their bikes, do video games, whatever. So I would, at the beginning of the week, put all their schoolwork into a folder and it was dated by or labeled by day. And then that was it. If they needed help, they would come to me. And over time, this got easier and easier. And I was able to then start working part-time and now working full-time. And we decided, made a decision. I wanted them to be able to experience things like theater and sports and other activities. One son is a real extrovert, which I think he needs those things for. The other is a real introvert, and I think he needs those things to be less introverted. And so I thought, well, you know, let's do this. I can go get a full-time job. But living on one income is possible. It is especially possible in Virginia. You know, the cost of living's less, you know, hear that stupid statement all the time. But it is in comparison to some other places, and it is if you can make priorities to make it a possibility. But if you are going to buy a boat and an RV and ATVs and a beach house, and, okay, then no, it's not possible. You both have to work. I mean, you're making choices. You're making a choice to not be able to send your kids to private school. You're making a choice not to be able to homeschool your kids. It's that simple. And society in general, if you don't have kids, is making that choice. You know, people out there are making choices like this every day if they have children. And, you know, we have a bunch of kids. So I talk to my son and I talk to his friends and, you know, I say, you know, they have, I've got a job and blah, blah, blah. And I tell them, I said, look, it's real simple. Just show up. And you're living in an era. You know, I had to show up early, work extra hard. You don't have to do any of that. You just got to show up. Show up and do your job. That's all you have to do, and you'll be successful. That's pretty insane. When I tell my sons this. You could be store manager. You could be regional manager by the time you're halfway through college, because none of these people that work here care. All you have to do is care, do a little bit more. Of course, I think you should do a lot more, but I'm illustrating that point that you know all you have to do to succeed is to show up. That's ridiculous. But a lot of that is these parents have checked out. They're not invested in their kids' lives. And it's all this stuff that you see everywhere. People don't care about their jobs and they're not good employees. You know, summer jobs used to teach you to be a worker, teach you to work, teach you what you didn't want to do. Well, I sure as heck don't want to, you know, work on a farm if you tried that, or I don't want to do construction if you tried that, or whatever, which meant maybe next year you came back and you did a little better in school so you could go to college. But now these kids, they don't have any of that. And their parents are spoiling them and buying them brand new Broncos and driving the old car themselves. Weird stuff like that. Look at little Susie. She did so good on the volleyball team. Let's give her a reward. Let's spoil her is what you're doing. So I think there is something different though. And there's hope as I watch my son's friends is he and the generation coming up now at his age at 17, 18, they're much more Gen X than whatever the snowflakes millennials that came before them. They've still got issues with, technology, looking at their phones and those things, but they're smarter and seem more savvy and seem more wise to the game, if you know what I mean. And that's, I think, because a lot of people who, myself, I'm Gen X, and I've constantly been, all of my rants and all my explanations look at life through that lens that the man is trying to get me down. And that's just the way it is. You got to find a way around it. And whereas the generation before, it was like, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody's wonderful. Everybody's the best. We're all the same. No, we're not. That dude over there is weird. That guy over there is stupid. That girl over there is just she's just different. And you know what? That's okay. That's the thing. That's okay. It's okay to be weird. It's sad, but it's okay to be stupid. Most people actually, I have this viewpoint that most people actually aren't stupid. They're ignorant. If you don't know that it's wrong to take two parking spots up because no one's ever told you, is that because you're stupid or is that because you're ignorant? No one's told you that. And there's lots of examples like that. It's not actual stupidity, but everyone, because of the lack of leadership that we have in our society, is leading with that viewpoint that everyone is a moron. Everyone is stupid. I've got a coworker. He's a millennial. He is not stupid. he does things that are ignorant sometimes. But I'll give you an example. I don't think he listens. He installed a mag lock. These are mag locks that can hold some of them up to 4,000 pounds of pressure. He tried to install it with drywall screws up into the drill into a door frame. It's typically filled with cement, and then drill up into that. You got to use special anchors and other things. And he tries to put drywall anchors, you know, just little plastic things up in there. And I looked at him. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, he didn't. He's like, that'll hold. I'm like, no, it won't. And so then he did it the right way. But my point in that is that's not stupidity. That's ignorance. Nobody ever told him. He didn't know. You know, it's not like a job that you just know how to do until you have to go back and fix it because it fell down or whatever. So, yeah, now he knows, and he's no longer ignorant about that aspect. So I think society is full of that kind of stuff happening, and this whole generation, these millennials, everyone treats them like they're morons. They don't know how to deal with it. They're not. They're just massively ignorant about a lot of things, and then everyone doesn't know how to deal with them. Oh, they're really thin-skinned and whatever. Well, I don't care about that. It does. I am short-tempered, I will say, and I have to really not do that. And so it takes more patience sometimes when working with people like this, because I want it done my way, and I expect it should just be done that way. I shouldn't have to explain it. Well, that's not the way the world is. And that's bad leadership. So I can't be like that. All right, that was a long run there, talking about schools. And I hope, you know, hey, you got a friend that's weighing these decisions, you know, send them this podcast and have them listen. Because these are important issues, especially if you're a Christian. Even if you're not, though, you're going to put your kid into a government school that, aside from, and he doesn't even talk about this here, aside from the spiritual deficiencies, let's call it, at the government schools, the educational, I mean, you see the latest test results are a disaster. These are Democrat policies that have put these kids out of the school system and then masked them. And so there's all these speech issues and testing issues and all these things. Aside from the spiritual, we have all this academic stuff that we're dealing with. They're not educating these kids. They're not. And what they are doing is propagandizing them with a bunch of communist climate change garbage that isn't going to serve them at all in this life, except to make them activists and non-shower taking, granola eating, Birkenstock wearing hippies. I don't know. Have a listen to this clip, which I think perfectly illustrates. This is old. This black and white video I found on, I don't remember where, I think Facebook. And it perfectly illustrates, well, what the communists are doing now. Have a listen.
In 1943, the following directive was issued from party headquarters to all communists in the United States. It read, "When certain obstructionists become too irritating, label them after suitable buildups as fascist or Nazi or anti-Semitic, and use the prestige of anti-fascist and tolerance organizations to discredit them. In the public mind, constantly associate those who oppose us with those names which already have a bad smell. The association will, after enough repetition, become fact in the public mind."
Boy, that sounds familiar. Isn't that right, you white supremacist, fascist, MAGA, ultra conservative MAGA, whatever. You know, it's interesting, for all the hard work the FBI has done at finding some white supremacists and this massive conspiracy of white supremacy and Nazis and whatever. I mean, actually, it's interesting because that whole search and that whole line of whatever is exactly what Putin is using as the reason to justify what he's doing in various parts of the world. Denazification of Ukraine and all this stuff. And then we have Bumbles getting up there and we're ultra MAGA and all this stuff. What's so great about being ultra MAGA? I'm ultra Make America Great Again. Or I'm ultra mega MAGA. Whatever. I just want America to be great again. Why can't we be great? What is wrong with us being great? I believe that America is a great country. I want us to be great. It should just be great. Oh, unless you're a white supremacist. You're a fascist. Okay, commie. I guess you're still using those 1940s talking points from the Communist Party in the United States. And speaking of Soviets, this is from Soviet Life. It was from March 1981. And this was a publication that the Communist Party was putting out inside the United States. And it was this weird joint thing. Go back and listen to the first one where I talk about this. This is weird joint thing where we were supposedly allowed to send in American Life to the Soviet Union, and they were allowed to put this crap into circulation in the United States. Well, I can guarantee you that not but a handful of people ever saw that. They probably used it to heat their furnaces or something, but they weren't allowed to read it. The question in here, this is letters from different people. Question, and here's the thing, this is nonsense. These letters are so contrived. These questions are contrived and the answers are contrived, but you know, you'll get the idea. It's all propaganda. It seems to us that citizens of a socialist country can hardly compare with the citizens of any Western country as far as the range of civil and political rights granted to them is concerned. Moreover, they say here that your constitutional duties are nothing but infringements on personal freedom. Are human rights ensured under socialism? And the answer says, judging by letters received from our readers, it appears that Americans have a vague idea of the rights enjoyed by the Soviet people in their everyday life, primarily of Soviet citizens' civil and political rights. Yeah, tell that to Solzhenitsyn. Article 34 of the USSR Constitution states, citizens of the USSR are equal before the law, without distinction of origin, social, property, status, race or nationality, sex, education, language, attitude to religion, type, nature of occupation, domicile, or other status. The equal rights of citizens of the USSR are guaranteed in all fields of economic, political, and social and cultural life. By law, Soviet citizens are guaranteed freedom of speech, of the press, and of assembly, meetings, street processions, and demonstrations. What a bunch of baloney! This is such a lie. They're totally not guaranteed these things. You're not having protests and parades and stuff in the Soviet Union unless it's ones that they say you're going to have this parade. They're like, well, okay, comrade. It is impossible to imagine Soviet life without the right to associate in public organizations, without freedom of conscience, without legal protection of the inviolability of the person, of the home, of the privacy of citizens, of their correspondence and telephone conversations. Oh my gosh, the lies. All Soviet people have the right of protection by the courts against encroachments on their honor, reputation, life, health, personal freedom, and property. Ha, what property? All properties in common, held in common in the Soviet Union. What property? The Soviet people are also guaranteed the freedom of scientific, technical, and artistic work. Let us now take a look at the social and economic aspects of human rights and how average Soviet citizens participate in running public affairs. There has been no unemployment in the Soviet Union since the early 30s. Oh my gosh, this is such nonsense. And all citizens here have the right to work. That is, says our Constitution, to guaranteed employment, including the right to choose their trade and profession, type of job, and work in accordance with their inclinations, ability, training, and education. There is no need to explain that what that right means to people. We can only say that without it, men and women cannot feel really free. The universal right to education is ensured in the Soviet Union by the free provision in all its forms. In addition, the overwhelming majority of students receive state scholarships and grants for living expenses. The law envisages a number of privileges for those who combine work with study. For example, additional paid leave during examination periods and for writing their thesis, work only in the daytime, and reduce travel rates for taking examinations. In the Soviet Union, the right to health protection is also included in the Constitution. Medical care here is free and guaranteed to all. Yeah, and it sucks. It's guaranteed to all. You just may not get it in time to not die. You need a surgery to have your appendix removed. Oh, we can get you scheduled for 6 months from now. So it's technically free. I guess the is your burial part of the Soviet process too? If you visit our clinics and inquire about the social makeup of the patients, you will find workers, business executives, farmers, academicians, office workers, famous writers and film stars, and people from big cities and remote villages. The duration of stay at a clinic or services of the best doctors depend on the medical necessity of the case, not on the person's financial means. Not a single piece of Western legislation grants citizens the right to housing. In the Soviet Union, this right is included in the Constitution. This means that the state provides all citizens with new apartments, free of charge. Priority of distributing new apartments is given to large families living in unsatisfactory housing conditions, and not to people who occupy high positions in society. Liar! We know that's not true. Now, about the Soviet people's constitutional duties. Indeed, it is sometimes said that we have many more obligations to society and the state than do Americans, and that this allegedly infringes on our freedom. Let's take a look at Soviet citizens' basic duties under the Constitution. We are obliged to observe the Constitution of the USSR and Soviet laws. Aren't Americans obliged to observe their laws? We are obliged to preserve and protect socialist property and safeguard the interests of the Soviet state. Is there anything extraordinary in this? Defense of the socialist motherland is a sacred duty of every citizen of the USSR. Isn't defense of the U.S. a duty of Americans? Well, yeah. The difference is that we willingly, if we are a patriot, and I am, would gladly take up arms or do whatever to defend this country. Whereas there, they're making people do it. The only exception is the obligatory service in the army for Soviet citizens, while in the U.S. the armed forces are formed on a voluntary basis. Again, there is nothing unusual here. There is obligatory military service in Great Britain, France, West Germany, and other Western countries. Under the Constitution, the Soviet people are obliged to work conscientiously, respect the national dignity of our other citizens, help maintain public order, strengthen their friendships between the national and ethnic groups in our country, protect nature, historical monuments, and help strengthen world peace. Is there any infringement on freedom here? See what they do? They have just enough truth to make it sound plausible. And some weak-willed, ignorant fool reads this and goes, wow, this communism ain't so bad. As for the problem of emigration, we must point out that the Soviet legislation and rules pertaining to it are in full accordance with the UN International Covenants on Civil and Political Rights. These covenants in particular permit restriction of the right to leave one's country for another, if it is necessary to protect national security, public order, public health, or morals of the rights and freedoms of others. That means that in some cases, permission to leave may be withheld until, for instance, the members of the family have settled their mutual relations. Permission to leave is also withheld for certain periods when people possess information which constitutes a state secret, or when people have recently undergone special military training or of particular importance. After the term of secrecy elapses, the question of leaving the country is reconsidered. There is no other reason for refusing those who want to leave. Okay. Whatever you say. We don't know who actually wrote that. They all have the same sound to them, so I think they're all written by the same committee or group or person, because they all sound like that.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests. I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
And I think that's from a movie called The Dictator, and I think it's that Sacha Baron Cohen guy. I don't know if it came across on Instagram, but I thought it was pretty funny. It kind of explains a lot about America, and I don't have a problem with 1% of the population being the richest. I'm okay with that, you know? If it's being done without bailouts when they screw up, or it's not because of perverse incentives, or it's not because they're a rich scumbag politician and know about when to trade things and stuff and, you know, legal insider trading, which these politicians do, or, you know, essentially it's funny because if you were to take out the one man thing and basically change it, why are you so against oligarchy? Because that's what we have. We have an oligarchy. Some would call it a kleptocracy, whatever. But we have an oligarchy where we have a group of people making all the decisions for the rest of us. So it's kind of like a dictatorship. So I thought it was pretty funny. Every time I hear it, it makes me laugh more. But it kind of it ties in really well with this Soviet life. I'd like to thank Adam Hopkins for supporting this show. Adam is a real estate broker in the Forest, Virginia area, serving Forest, Bedford, you know, Nelson, Pulaski, Amherst, Campbell, Lynchburg, the whole area around Forest, and he's got a great team of people. You can get in touch with them at adamhopkins, hopkins.net. Check it out. It does some really cool stuff. The other day, I was watching one of his videos that he posted to social media, and a drone was flying. It was up high, and all of a sudden, it like flew through the house. It was cool. It flew all around the house, and then it flew out a window. I'm like, this is awesome. I mean, that's the kind of marketing when an agent is getting anywhere from 3 to 10%, depending on his role. He should do his job. He should work hard. And Adam does. And Adam does a good job. Real quick, I want to, before I talk about the lesser magistrate, I want to talk about this whole nuclear war stuff. I'm not going to spend really any time on this, but I wanted to mention it. If this is something you're concerned about, Radio Free Readout did a episode on this recently. Good podcast to keep in the arsenal. You know, they talked about it, but I'm really not worried about it. There's, frankly, if we get attacked by nuclear weapons, I want to be at ground zero and just not be here. Do not want to, I don't want to survive that. No thanks. Look, I have diabetes. I'm dead anyway, shortly after. So I'm all good with the ground zero thing. Just let me know when it's coming. I'll go stand outside. But, hey, if you're one of those people, you know, you're wanting to know what you should do and all this stuff, there's lots of resources out there. You know, that's the problem. Nuclear bombs, man. All right, I'm going to talk about the Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. But before I do, I want to thank ActiCare of the Blue Ridge for sponsoring this segment of the show. ActiCare is in-home care for your senior loved one when you can't be there. If you're in Bedford, Campbell, Amherst, Lynchburg, Smith Mountain Lake, out in the country, get in touch with them and they'll take good care of you. John and his team are great people, and they're always looking for great people to service as clients. So ACTIKARE.com/blue-ridge. All right, the Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates, Chapter 3. And we've been talking about where power and authority comes from. We've been talking about the Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. It's a book, actually, of that title. And you can go back and listen to previous episodes. I've gone through the intro, chapter 1, chapter 2. This is chapter 3. All authority is delegated, chapter 3. God is the ultimate authority. The Bible says plainly, the Most High rules over the realm of mankind. He gave his law at Sinai. Their very first decree is, you shall have no other gods before me. He created us and thus knew best how we should be governed. God is the ultimate lawgiver and ruler. God has established four realms of government to which he delegates his authority. They are self-government, Family government, church government, and civil government. Each has its own role, functional and jurisdictional. If one invades the jurisdiction of the other, chaos or tyranny ensues. Each of these governments has positions of authority. Self-government authority, of course, is the individual. In family government, the man is the head of the home. His wife acts as his co-regent, and both have authority over their children and property. In church government, there are the offices of elder, deacon, and pastor. In civil government, there are many and varied positions of authority ranging from policeman to the president. The authority an individual possesses in any of these four realms of government is delegated authority. In other words, they derive their authority from God. Their authority is not autonomous or unconditional. Their authority is God-given, and thus they have a duty to govern in accordance with his rule. A father, who has authority in family government, for example, should not tell his child to go rob the corner gas station, because if caught, the child will face less severe punishment than he. Rather, the father has a duty before God to instruct his child in honesty and hard work, and to abhor theft. Hence, the father does not rule autonomously. He does not get to contradict the law of God just because he has a position of authority. The authority he has is delegated to him from God, and he has a duty, therefore, to govern his home in accordance with God's rule. So it is with civil government. Its power is not unlimited, nor is its rule to be autonomous. The word autonomous comes from two Greek words, autos, which means self, and nomos, which means law. The authority of the state is not autonomous. They do not get to create law out of thin air or by whim. Men need to understand that the state is not God. They do not get to rule by mere fiat. They do not get to just make up law as they go. The authority of the state is limited. The authority it possesses is delegated authority from God. That the authority of the state is delegated from God is seen, among other places, in Romans 13. The first verse declares, "For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Hence the authority that the state possesses is delegated from God, and as such, they have a duty to govern in conformity with his rule." America's founders understood that the civil government's authority was delegated and therefore limited. They stated in the Declaration of Independence that all men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They understood that rights did not originate from the state, but rather were given to men by God. Britain had ceased to rule and function within its God-ordained limits. Therefore, America's colonists found themselves in conflict with her. The very next line in the Declaration states that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Hence, when a government ceases to protect its citizenry of their God-given rights, but instead constructs laws attacking and depriving men of those rights, that government has perverted its power and has decided to play the tyrant. Such a government is to be resisted and not obeyed regarding those areas of unjust laws. John of Salisbury, in his monumental work, Polycraticus, written in 1159, taught that the state's authority was delegated authority. He writes, "All power, authority, is from the Lord God. The power which the prince has is therefore from God. The power of God is never lost nor severed from him, but he merely exercises it through a subordinate hand." The state's authority is not autonomous, nor unlimited. Rulers are not to contravene, violate, oppose, or contradict God's law. Citizens are not bound to hold unlimited obedience to the civil government. In his writing, Salisbury states plainly that the king is a king precisely because he rules in the fear of the Lord, and according to his law. When the king makes laws contrary to God's law, he becomes a tyrant. What is tyranny? Salisbury wrote, "For tyranny is abuse of power entrusted by God to man. All authority, including civil authority, is delegated authority. When a higher authority makes unjust law, he abuses his power and may be resisted. When the lesser magistrate sees the higher magistrate make bad law, it is the right and duty of the lesser magistrate to interpose against such false law. When the state authorities make law that contravenes or impugns the law of God, John Calvin wrote, "For earthly princes lay aside their power when they rise up against God, and are unworthy to be reckoned among the number of mankind. We ought rather to spit upon their heads than obey them." Unfortunately, many people today are unconsciously schooled in statism. They think that the authority of the civil government is absolute and limitless. They think that rights and laws originate with the state. An example of this is the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. God is nowhere acknowledged in the declaration. That's because statists believe that the state is the originator of law and rights. Such thinking, however, stands in stark contrast to America's Declaration of Independence, which recognizes rights are given of God to men. Because statism seems to have pervaded our culture down to every avenue, including academia, the media, and public policy, most politicians today do believe their authority is limitless, that they do rule by fiat, that they do get to create law out of thin air by a whim. The lesser magistrate doctrine, however, reminds the higher authority that the authority is delegated and limited. No man who holds state office rules with autonomy. The authority he has delegated to him by God. The authority he has is delegated to him by God. Hence, all those in positions of authority stand accountable to God. The standard is seen in areas of government, in family government, for example. If a husband tells his wife to murder his son or daughter, she has a duty not to obey him. Also, if a husband decides to murder his son or daughter and forbids his wife to try and stop him, she has a duty to try and stop him anyway. So it is with civil government. If the higher authority commands that which God forbids, or forbids which God commands, the lesser magistrate must not obey, and if necessary, actively resist. The state is not God. The state's authority is not limitless. They don't get to do whatever just seems good to them. Men should not give unlimited obedience to civil government. In fact, men have a duty to oppose any in authority when they make unjust or immoral laws. A couple of wow moments that I read here, and this is the quote from John Calvin. For earthly princes lay aside their power when they rise up against God, and are unworthy to be reckoned among the number of mankind. We ought rather to spit upon their heads than obey them. That's pretty awesome. I wonder how much John Calvin in that instance was talking about not just the king or princes, but also those that maybe were leading the Roman Catholic Church. I'm curious, but I'm not gonna dig into it. That is from Commentary on Daniel, Lecture XXX, Daniel 6:32. There's another good quote here that says, men need to understand that the state is not God. They do not get to rule by mere fiat. They do not get to just make up law as they go, which is exactly what Bumbles and all these people are doing right now. So look at the student debt thing. Oh, we're just going to wave a magic wand, and by fiat, I decree that you no longer have to pay back up to $10,000, blah, 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 whatever. Which is kind of funny, because when you think about what people typically have, let's say they've got, you know, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 in student loan debt. I mean, what is that? $10,000? They talk about student loan forgiveness. That's not student loan forgiveness. That's a pittance compared to what is actually owed. And let me ask you another question, as many have probably said and you've probably heard. Why should I, as somebody who didn't go to college, or even you maybe that did and you paid your own way through, why should I have to pay for any of your choices? You made a choice. If you have student loans, you made that choice. Why is that my problem? Yeah, it sucks. Tough luck. Deal with it. Have you seen these memes that are, they're not really memes. Somebody took the Spirit Halloween costume and made up their own costume thing with them. There's multiple iterations of this out there. But this one is a picture of one of these drag queen demon whatever with the horns coming out of their head. And it says child groomer. Does his costume include clown makeup, tattered wig, horns dress, storybook, children sold separately? They're really clever. Here's one. there's just a lot of really good ones. There's some, you know, there's ones about Jeep owners. I mean, whoever started that, I'd like to know who started that. They did a good job. Pretty funny. You can find a lot of good memes over at westernrifleshooters.us. is where I get most of my funny ones. Another one says, which is kind of along the lines of what I was talking about. It's a picture of a guy smoking a cigarette. It's just his knees, and you see the rifle pointing out, and it says, just hanging out waiting for you guys to figure out that voting isn't working. I know it's kind of along the lines of what I said, but a little bit contrary to it, but that's where I'm at, you know. Voting's not working, but it's what we got at the moment, and until people are ready to do patriot stuff, I guess here we are. Get ready and go vote. I mean, it's that simple. School board's a tough one because a lot of those are not running as politically backed. So they're not Democrat, Republican. There are some. So that's a little tougher to sort out. And there's no way I can possibly cover all of Virginia and all the politics of Virginia. You're just going to have to figure it out. And I mean, it's not hard. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Probably at, in fact, I guarantee every one of us knows one really politically connected guy, you know, that's tuned in. Just ask that guy, hey, who should we vote for this? And he'll tell you. That's the length of the work you want to put into it, fine. But get ready for a wild ride, because I think that there's going to be cheating, and I think that there's going to be a lot of things changing in the House and the Senate. And these people are going to lose it in the 2 months that they have left. And we've got all kinds of crazy happening in the world. So just get ready. I'd like to thank you for listening. And remember, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. I'm Hank Reardon. This is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.